Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another Wednesday of American Tennis. Every Wednesday at noon, you can listen to American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. And also, I wanted to remind you that throughout the week, we have some other wonderful programs on the UR Tennis Network. Lisa Stone and Parenting Aces, her show is every Monday at noon on the UR Tennis Network. Also, 2 hours from right now, Jason Haynes has his College Tennis Connection. And Jason is the founder of the UR Tennis Network, and we really are very, very thankful because we can talk about things we didn't used to be able to talk about, and we can get issues on the table. I remind you every week that our mission of American Tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out and, doggone it, talk about those things that are much deeper than just surface, not just cliches and facts. We need you to go to opinions, feelings, and needs, and we need a lot. We need sincerity, depth. We need people more than just systems. We need incentives right now, folks. It gets down to just old basic motivation in so many ways. But the UR Tennis Network is on every week. I wanted to remind you of Coach J.P. Weber's on the Yellow Ball Network on Tuesday. It's the We Coach Tennis Program, and over 2,000 people, 2,000 tennis coaches now on that blog site, J.P. Weber on UR Tennis Facebook website. Go there, folks, and get some fantastic updated information. I'm Chuck Creasy. This is my show every Monday at noon, or excuse me, every Wednesday at noon. And you can go to my blog at chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net. You've got every show logged there as well. And you can go back into the archives and listen to every one of the shows and all of the issues. Edmund Burke said that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And we definitely need to stand up. All we ask you is stay professional, address issues, not people. And doggone it, you can say anything you want to. Our First Amendment rights are very, very important. We need to have our opinions on the table, and we need to go somewhere with the courage, I guess, to do this, because we just aren't grooming leaders, and we're not getting things done as much as we want to. Before I go any further, I want to introduce our guest. I don't know if I call you Congressman Carter or Steve or Coach Carter. I mean, Steve Carter, thanks for being on the line here today.
My pleasure, Chuck. You got
Steve
me?
Is one of my, folks, is one of my dearest friends in the coaching profession. Actually, my first summer ever, as I, with when 1 month of getting my job at Clemson, I was on the back courts at Kalamazoo. We were out at old high school, and I saw one other coach out there sort of in the trenches trying to find somebody special, and it was Coach Steve Carter. And I think we became friends there, and the friendship has lasted. But, Steve, I want to just talk just briefly about you. I've never met a person that is able to get things done the way Steve Carter does. He has a knack with people. He has an ability to see the needs that people have. But then also he connects the dots better than anybody I've ever met. If I was anywhere in the world and I wanted somebody with me to sort of get things done, I'd pick up Steve Carter. Steve, you are blessed beyond belief with the gifts you have. And then Steve was the coach at LSU, folks, and then after that, he went into administration. He's been an athletic director. He worked in administration there at LSU. And then he also ran tennis camps in South Carolina for several years. And I always knew you would be a politician there, Congressman Carter. But can you go back? I want you to just talk a little bit about your sports history and your also what you did and how this has sort of led to where you are right now. And I want to talk about the battles you are having in education, because you are the chairman of the House of Education Committee there in the state of Louisiana. And you're facing the same things we are. The frustration is unbelievable that we have in trying to work through bureaucracies in tennis. So, Coach Carter, talk about yourself here a little bit and give the people a little bit of background on you, because the older coaches all know you, but to those out there, new people to tennis, they might not. So go ahead, Coach.
Okay, Chuck, thank you for having me on your program. And likewise, thank you for the kind comments. And you and I have been friends for a long, long time. Philosophically, we're on the same page. Basically, what we attempt to try to do is to improve the quality of life of the youngsters that we work with and all the other people that are surrounded by us. So thank you very much for what you do. My dad got the first PhD ever given at LSU, and that was quite some time ago. So he was more, from an academic standpoint, attuned than I was. We were transferred. He worked at Exxon. Was transferred to Venezuela when I was in the eighth grade. I play every sport that I can conceivably play because I love the competition. I love the people that I get involved with in each one of the sports. The only thing to do in Caracas, well, I was in Maracaibo, below Caracas, was an old dirt court of which we had to roll every day. And they had a gentleman out there that was going to teach my brother and I how to play tennis. So I learned from there, came back to the States, played a little bit of summer tennis, played a number of other things. Coach Robinson was our tennis coach. That was before freshmen were eligible to play. And so he asked me to come out for the LSU tennis team and to play freshman tennis, which I did. And then after that, he said, I've got a scholarship for you. I want you to play college tennis. I said, great. I told my dad I was not going to get involved in anything. I was going to study hard. I was going to make him proud because I'm the only six-sport letterman that ever graduated from my high school, which is University High, which meant I didn't study very much. I didn't take too much time to put emphasis on my academics, which in retrospect, that was a mistake. But it enabled me, because of all the things that I had done with all the other sports, to meet an awful lot of people. So in doing so, I played tennis at LSU, got involved in student government work, met Jimmy Taylor, the great running back for the Green Bay Packers, along with Carl Maddox, who was the athletic director at the time at LSU, and Joe Dean, who subsequently followed Carl Maddox as athletic director at LSU. And I was playing handball at the time. Well, when I graduated from college, went into the Air Force, played tennis in the Air Force with some great players like Brian Chaney and Jimmy Parker. They were in the Air Force with me. So the athletic director at the time, Carl Maddox, asked that I come back and work in the athletic department. And so I did. And a year later, Coach Robinson, who coached me, walked into my office and said, my wife has been diagnosed with cancer. I want to resign. I want you to take over as tennis coach. So I ended up becoming the LSU tennis coach, and that's when you and I met, on that fence in Kalamazoo. It was great. I, for the most part, we had Louisiana kids with a few other kids sprinkled from out of the country to come play. We promoted the sport. I remember one night we played Ohio State. We tried to figure out ways to get people to come to the matches. We played them. They came out, the TV cameras did, promoted the match, and we had standing room only. And it was just a great time in my life. I enjoyed it. I got out of doing that, went into the camp business like you have, and loved kids. Got out of that and ended up deciding to run because term limits came into effect in the state of Louisiana in 07 and decided to run for the House of Representatives. Was fortunate enough to win, and now I'm fortunate enough to still be in the House. We have term limits. You have 3-4-year terms. I'm on the second of my 3-year terms, and I was appointed chairman of the House Education Committee mainly because of my tennis background, dealing with people, dealing with kids, and having an opportunity to run a number of kids through my tennis camp for 20 years. So that's where I am right now.
Chuck? You know, you talk about term limits. How much longer will your term be, and how much longer can you serve?
I can serve. I'm in the eighth year of my second. In other words, we have 3 4-year terms. So I'm in my second term. I can run for reelection next year and serve 4 more years if I elect to do so.
Yeah, well, they're quite lucky to have you. But I look, our situations are quite the same. I mean, our environment is quite the same. The people who blame our society on tennis not prospering, they have maybe a point. But at the same time, we've got plenty of talent out there. I always say there has to be a director of screw-up somewhere. I won't use the other word. But a director of screw-up somewhere there, Coach Carter, and they need to be getting paid overtime because we have the greatest country in the world. We have the most the best facilities in our colleges and in our, in any stretch of the imagination, the best facilities in the world. We have everything we need. Now, I want to compare it. We also, in schools, we have great facilities, computers, dedicated people, but we still are screwing up. Overall, the universal problem, I mean, can you go there and talk a little bit about the general problems before we get some specific ones that you see the parallels or the correlations between education and why it is failing in our country and why tennis is as well?
Yeah, well, it's a large issue. I'll try to be as brief as I can, but I am passionate about your question. I've had a great life because I'm educated. I've been able to travel the world. I've been able to do the things that I want to do simply for one reason, that I'm educated. Well, this day and time, I don't think we set our sights high enough. I know when I was in the coaching profession, as you were and still are, that if you have low expectations, they're going to go to wherever the expectation might be and achieve. And they may be successful, but they're not going to maximize their talents. They're not going to do the things that are necessary. To do the things that are necessary, you have to have a game plan, and you have to work extremely hard because there are other people out there that are working hard. And if you don't work as hard as they are, they're going to pass you by. This leads to the problem. I feel like that society today, and I know it's different and it's very difficult, but if we don't get youngsters early, and I'm talking about year or year and a half, and get them into early childhood programs where they'll have an opportunity to develop their minds, because nowadays you have an awful lot of families where maybe they don't have a father at home, and you also have a mother that's having to work 2 or 3 jobs to raise the family, so they don't have the time to spend ensuring that the youngster learns the ABCs, learns a little bit of math, learns how to read, learns how to do the things that are necessary, that other families in America have that opportunity to do so. So I think that if we can catch kids early, give them a base, give them a foundation, and allow them to start in kindergarten on an even plane with everybody else, then every one of those youngsters will have an opportunity to succeed in life. I know when I was coaching, and I know when I was running my tennis camps, like you, I mean, we were pretty tough. We expected and demanded that each youngster maximize their talent. I use as an example. If you're sitting there on a subway in New York City, you don't know one soul on that subway. They're just a blob. Only way you can separate yourself from them is do something extremely well that people recognize you for, and therefore you've gone above and beyond what's expected, and you've gotten yourself out of mediocrity. Or kill somebody, and they're going to know who you are. But everybody else is in the middle. They're a blob. So how do you get out of the blob? I ask kids a question. If you are in a war zone and you are exhausted and you ask 25 kids this, who would you want to watch your back while you took a nap? Look around. And they'll pick someone. And I say, well, you know who it ought to be? It ought to be you. It ought to be everybody. Everybody ought to be reliable and dependable to the extent that they separate themselves from everybody else simply because they want to achieve, they want to have a great life, and they want to have an opportunity to do the things that are necessary to ensure that they have a great life. But what that also means, Chuck, is you need to give back. You need to make sure that when you leave this earth, that this world is a little bit better off simply because of who you are and what you do. So I know I've rambled a little bit, but I'm telling you right now, we don't set our sights high enough. And when we don't set your sights high enough and you don't give people an opportunity to achieve success, then they're going to waddle around in mediocrity.
Two things you brought up that I want to address. Number one, you're saying that when I speak often that we don't speak to the king or the queen in our young people. We talk to the little boy and the little girl, and we don't speak to them. But with the participation trophies, with the dumbing down, with the tennis is being dumbed down tremendously with these abbreviated scoring formats. And just my line, Steve, often is I'll say that participation does not breed excellence, but excellence will always breed participation. And then I always say, if we continue to champion the weak, we end up weakening our real champions. So it's a double-edged sword. So, but that's number one. We agree there. But here's the thing I maybe disagree with you just a little bit. You talk about opportunities a lot. I have a formula that I use, and you being in coaching and education all these years, you'll understand that. But I often have parents ask me, does my son or my daughter have what it takes? And I'll say, you know what? I've been asked that so many times. Instead of giving you a subjective answer, I'm going to give you a very objective and very something that you can add a score up. So, Steve, I give them a 1 to 10 scale in three areas: ability, desire, and opportunity. Those three things. Now, people say nurture, nature, and self. Of course, the nurture part is the opportunity part, and, you know, sociologists will say it's all nurture, and that's, you know, somewhat of what you're saying. Geneticists will say, no, it's nature, it's the ability, it's the God-given ability. But then psychologists say, no, it's self or the desire part. So here's the deal. Those things, ability, desire, and opportunity, those three things. If you get it out your pencil right now, I'm going to have Steve Carter on the ire of ability, God-given ability, rate yourself as an athlete from 1 to 10, as a child, as a 15-year-old. Rate yourself, Carter. What were you?
I'm a 9 or a 10 because I'm unbelievably competitive.
I didn't say competitive.
Know,
I'm saying God-given ability. I played you in tennis before, okay?
And I killed you.
You're not the thoroughbred. You're not a plotter, but you're not that thoroughbred. You're about an 8.
Yeah, but let me tell you, if I don't think that I am, I'm not going to be one.
No. Okay, I didn't ask that. I asked, what is your God-given ability? You're about an 8.
It's pretty good. I got good hands.
You're an 8. I'm an 8.1. Okay, I'm an 8.1, all right? Because I won those last two sets we played in Louisiana.
The
15 right. years ago, I still win. I remember those two sets I won. Okay, you're an 8. Your opportunities as a child to play on a scale of 1 to 10 were what, Coach Carter?
10.
You had a lot of opportunity. Okay, good.
Great
all right.
parents,
your
everything going
your desire. Your desire is what? A 10,
well,
9?
Well, here's the problem, Chuck. I want to play golf. I want to play baseball. I want to play basketball.
Okay,
so when
all
you
right.
say desire, I that was my problem. I didn't home in on one thing. I did a lot
all
of
right.
things. But I had a big
but
desire.
Were you,
there's no doubt about
just
it.
Just give me a number. I'm trying to make a point here, Coach.
7 or 8. Seven or eight.
Seven. I'll give you seven or eight. Eight. What is it? Seven?
Give me an eight. Eight.
I'm going to give you an eight. So you got an eight in ability, an eight in desire, and a nine in opportunities. That's eight plus eight is 16 plus nine is 25. Now, let me tell you something. Years and years of coaching, 40 years of coaching now, I've come up with 23 to 25 you have to have to be big time or to be able to make it. Okay, you are 25. Your score is 25. Now, those three things, let's say if your ability was a 5, you still might have made it with your desire and your opportunities. But if your ability was a 5 and your opportunity was a 7, you would add a 20 at stretch. So anyhow, the point I'm making is it's all three of those, but you're saying it's opportunity. I'm saying we've dumbed down desire. Okay, tell me why I'm wrong, Coach, or what your thoughts are there.
Well, you're probably right on that. Let me give you a hands-on that I use as an example. Bera Caroli was an unbelievable gymnastics coach from Romania, developed an awful lot of talent, and developed some Olympic champions. He moved to the U.S., and he operated out of Houston. Everybody wanted to go to Bera Caroli. Well, Bera Caroli would interview each individual who applied to come to his school, and what he did was, in the deciding factor, he looked into their eyes and looked deep down into their heart. If they had heart, he accepted them. Now, I recognize the fact you got to have some talent, and I recognize the fact that he gave them the opportunity, but they didn't have a heart, and that's what you love about. I've seen you take kids that can't walk and chew gum. And the prime guy was back when, I can't remember his name now, who I said, this guy doesn't have a chance in heck.
Mike
Gandolfo.
About
4 years.
Just,
No.
Mike.
About 4 years later, he made the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open. What was that kid's
that
name?
That was Mark Dixon?
Yeah, Mark Dixon.
Okay, Mike. Okay,
so,
both Hall of Fame members now. Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead. You tell the story. Okay, go ahead.
No, but I'm just saying, here I am as a coach identifying talent, and I didn't know enough about his heart. I didn't know enough about his athletic ability, but I did notice that the son of a gun didn't look like he could walk and chew gum. You took that, and you told me, you said, that kid's going to be great before it's over with, and I told you, you were crazy. Obviously, I was wrong. You are the best development of talent. The USTA needs to hire you to develop talent. You can develop talent as good or better than anybody I've ever seen, and I think that's important. But the problem you've got, of course, is what are the goals and objectives of the people that you're trying to develop the talent for? And yours, of course, was because you were trying to win an NCAA championship. I don't know from a USTA standpoint, it seems to me like, and what they need to be doing is taking people, and I don't know enough about it because I've been out of tennis a little bit, but I'm not sure what the USTA is doing with some of the kids that they have. I think they've done a pretty good job. I think they can do a lot better job. That's just my opinion.
All right. Now let's go back to the formula. Let's go back to the, Tony Dungy. Have you read his book?
No.
He said there's three people that fail. Three kind of people that fail. The can't do's, the won't do's, are the only do's. That says it all. You know, now the can't do's. Let's take Mark Dixon. So you rated Mark Dixon on a scale of 1 to 10. His ability is a 5, correct?
Maybe a 4.
You said he couldn't shoot. 4. Okay, I'll go give him a 4. All right.
Okay.
His desire was a 10. His opportunities were a 9 or a 10. That's 24, which is one less than what you. I said 23 to 25. So, see, that's why he made it, and that's why he. Okay, so, you know, you can't put in what the good Lord left out. If he would have been a 2 or a 3, there's no way. I mean, you can't do magic
right
there. Now let's talk about what the USTA, and I'm not saying it's USTA, it's all of us. Academies do this. We could talk forever about academies. But you got a kid that's a 10. An ability or a 9. Let's give a kid a 9 in ability, and then we go to the desire. Okay, then we go to opportunities part. He's got a 9, and then the kid's only a 3 in desire. Carter, that's a 21. That don't cut it. Now, that's what I think is the deal right there. I think that is the deal. If kids are lazy or if kids aren't hungry, look, Clarence Mabry in 1980, you were still coaching. We were at the National Teachers Conference. We used to go up there together and listen to these great coaches. Clarence Mabry is one of my idols because for 20 years, folks, Trinity University was always top five in the country for 20 years, from 57 to about 77. And then they were always top 10 until they dropped their program. But the point is, Clarence Mabry, he had a talk, Steve, and he goes, somebody asked, what is the most important quality of a championship tennis player? And everybody thought, oh, it's going to be the forehand, the big forehand, or it's going to be the, he said, most certainly, listen to me, it is the hunger of an inquisitive mind, the kind of mind that asks questions. How do I get it done? What do I do next? How do I climb this next hill? You know, and I've used that over and over, Coach Carter, for years and years. So anyhow, thank you for your compliments. But basically, I think, here, look, you're going from the approach of opportunities. So talk about some of the things you're doing in education, first of all, so we don't get sidetracked here. Education as far as to get kids more opportunities early. See, if they're not getting it at home, well, they're not getting it at home. 72% of some of the inner city kids, one parent families. Overall, it's 44% now of every American families only has one parent in the home. You know, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, you're right. How are you going to do that without just invading people's privacy and getting kids out of the home? There.
Yeah. Well, again, it's not a quick fix. There is no quick fix to this. And again, I'm going to say that if you take a youngster who is in that type of situation and you put them into an environment where they can get their skill levels up to where when they become kindergarten bound or first grade bound, they're on the same level as all other kids, then you give them a fighting opportunity. And I'm convinced that if you are educated, you'll know what to do from a standpoint of what's right and wrong, making sure that when you have a youngster that you nurture that youngster, you do the things that are necessary to ensure that they have an opportunity to have a great quality of life. I just am convinced
that education
is the key. But you educate
it is
them.
The key.
You give them an opportunity. Because right now,
but it's not. What if the kids don't want opportunities? Carter, now all the kids hang on their cell phones. They're not hungry for it. Kids are like,
that's because they're not educated, Chuck. I mean, here you got
okay,
a kid.
Okay, how are you going to do that?
Okay, who comes from
how are you
a family,
do it?
You get them early. You give them an opportunity. I'm not saying all are going to take advantage of the situation, the opportunity. But right now, when you take a youngster, okay, and I will be, you know, I hope I'm not stepping on toes when I make this comment. You take a youngster whose mother, again, you're saying there's no father in the home, and who's working two or three jobs, and say that they're 6 years old, a lot of times the 11 or 12-year-old is taking care of the 6-year-old. Many times they may have to wear the same clothes to school two or three days in a row because their mother is working. A few times they may go to school and they're hungry. A few times they go to school and they hadn't had a chance to do their homework. They
all right,
fall behind
so why is that? Here, you're talking to it, and nobody disagrees with you out there, Coach. But where does that start? Where does that come from? Why do we have that situation? Why do we have a situation with one-parent families like we do? Okay, why?
Well, again,
I'm fishing here.
Those people that are in that situation and in that environment right now, I would guarantee you, for the most part, either dropped out of school early, didn't have a mentor, didn't have someone to carry them along, nurture them, encourage them, and give them the opportunities. We're talking about a generation of which we have not talked about this. It has happened to us simply because we allowed it to happen without discussing what the remedies are. I'm not bright enough to know how I can quick fix it. All I know is if you take a youngster and get him out of that environment, I'm gonna give you a quick example. I don't want to dominate what's going on. There's a young girl here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who was a Teach for America in a very horribly in a zip code that just is riddled with people getting shot and poverty, et cetera. She taught one youngster in the third grade, went home, got involved in a situation where they were at the wrong place at the wrong time, and got shot and was killed. She thought to herself, I'm not doing enough. So she started a school here in Baton Rouge, started the sixth grade, took 20 kids, would pick them up in the afternoons on Sunday, take them to school. They wash their clothes. They cook their food. They go to class. They do et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Put them back into the environment on Friday afternoon. Now, Seed Academy in Washington, D.C. did that. We're doing that here in Baton Rouge. Their test scores jumped from a 20 to an 87. So don't tell me it can't be done. It's just you've got to spend some time with kids. You've got to work with kids. You've got to nurture kids. You've got to love them. You've got to care for them. And I guarantee you we can solve the problem if we spend enough time with when they're young and give them the opportunity. That's just my philosophy. I may be wrong.
And,
Let me just say, you're not wrong.
I absolutely agree. And what I love is you never said once we've got to throw more money at the situation. But
no,
now here's the problem. You've got to ask yourself why our inner cities have from 50 to 70% one parent in the home, and why that is the case. And in the when the Great Society started in 1965 under Lyndon Johnson, we only had less than, it was like 17%. 17%. We've thrown millions of dollars at the situation. We prop up situations. You know, it's like participation trophies for a living. When you have participation trophies for living and give things to people without them having the hunger to do it, we all know what happens. It's devalued. The situation is not valued. It's just like when you make things easy, like winning a 10-point tiebreaker or winning in a no-ad set, what happens, it does not have as much value as a 3-out-of-5 set or a full match. When you get participation trophies, the kids do not value them. So what I'm saying here is you're exactly right. And you never once said we got to throw more money at it. You said we got to spend time, give them more love, give them, you know, more education. We have to motivate. So there lies the problem. How do we motivate people today? And this is fantastic.
We're getting I'm for choice. In other words, I don't care if you give a parent an opportunity to homeschool, you give them a voucher, you put them in a charter, you do whatever is necessary to give those families or that youngster an opportunity to be successful in life. I'm for the kid. I don't care how we do it. That's just my philosophy. I catch heck from it from the public schools. But like I said, if the public schools do their job, I love them. I'm for public schools.
That's right.
I don't care how
we get
the job done. Just get the dadgum job done and allow our youngsters to have an opportunity to have a great life.
Well, I mean, if you look back about 8 to 10 years ago in Washington, D.C., the mayor there hired a fantastic person for the city of Washington, D.C., where they came in and basically buckled down and made kids get back into classes, and you didn't give things away. And people were outraged because they made it hard. And there's something in our human nature that wants things easier instead of hard. But at the same time, Steve, I've never had somebody come back later complaining that, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I'm so mad that you made it hard. They'll always be mad if you made it easy. We got to go to commercial. We'll be right back with Steve Carter, and this is Call In. Call in today and talk Steve Carter.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
It breaks his heart seeing foreign cars filled with fuel it isn't ours. And wearing cotton we didn't grow. He's got the red, white, blue flying high on the farm. Simplified tattooed on his left arm. Print a little more in the store for a tag. In the back it says USA. He won't buy nothing and he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't printed dirt.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy, making them in America, American tennis. And we have guest state representative from Louisiana, Steve Carter, who is doing a tremendous job in making them in America, trying to make our educational program better, as he is the chairman of the House Education Committee there in the state of Louisiana. And, you know, Coach Carter, making them in America, we used to make them the best, and we didn't have all the resources. We didn't have all the money. We didn't have all those things, but we did have one thing. We had tremendous desire, and we had a swagger about us, knowing that if you do it in America, it's going to be done the best. And just competitors. We were just a country of competitors. And I'm throwing out to you that we're not a country of competitors. We used to be Eagles. Coach Carter, we used to be Eagles.
Yeah.
And now we are becoming pigeons that peck people's feet when we're not getting fed and given stuff. And we just expect handout participation trophies. We expect an easier thing. They're dumbing down sets of tennis, four-game sets. They're doing things. Everything is about let's make it easier, let's make it more fan-friendly. We're into the entertainment aspect instead of the education aspect. So I guess what I'd like to ask you, let's go to tennis here a little bit. I gave you some of the statistics. Where do we save American tennis? Where is it going to be saved at, if it is going to be saved? What are your thoughts?
Well, that's a great question. I'm sure that the people, the powers that be, have given a lot of thought to it. I just think that youngsters in America now have so many different options and so many opportunities. Obviously, the doggone video games are it's a sad situation where you see so many kids on their computers, on their cell phones, doing all the things. Like you say, you know, you make everything so easy for everybody. I think that there is enough talent out there that we can develop the talent to where American tennis can get back to where it was. The question is, how do you get that talent to get involved and want to participate and play, you know, the sport of tennis? And I know a lot of countries identify the talent at a young age. And by identifying the talent, like you say, you're using your three criteria. And once you get to a person that has a 25, then they may have to take them out of their environment and put them into a situation where they can compete against other people. Djokovic, I don't know how he did what he did in Serbia, where, you know, the country is bombed, he has no facilities, and how did he become the player that he became in the last, you know, 7 or 8 or 10 years? Do you know how it occurred? I mean, those are the types of people you want to try to find, and those are the type of people you want to try to identify and give them the opportunity to participate in our great sport.
Well, here's the thing. Let's go to the ability, desire, plus opportunity formula again. If you look at it, the ability is God-given. It is what it is. Some people are smarter, some people are not. Some people are faster, some people are not. Some people are just more talented with their hand skills, other people are not. That is a constant. But I believe that desire and opportunity are the two counterparts that are diabolically opposed to each other. The more desire there is, if you don't have opportunities, there's more desire. So to answer your question, Djokovic, obviously, ability's a 9. Desire was a 10. That's 19 right there. His opportunities, think about it, his opportunities only needed to be a 6. So they played in swimming pools, so that, you know, where, you know, the bombs were going off on the side and, you know, in the town and thing where they were playing. But the kids grew up that our greatest generation, Steve, our greatest generation, my father and your mother and your father and mother, they grew up depression without anything. Then they had World War II. And the 50s were the first period from 1920 to 1950 where there was 30 years of not having anything. So, I mean, this country was built on the greatest education. So my thing is desire and opportunity are diabolically opposed. Their opposition of each other. They can work inclusively, but I don't know how a person who has all the opportunities in the world has hungry, and I don't know how the person who does not have opportunities, you know, if you don't have opportunities, how can you not be hungry? Now, here's my fear. I told you we have eagles that we're turning into pigeons in our country as far as talent and as far as the hunger of young people. When you give people all these opportunities and they don't have desire on top of it, you got a loser there. You got. I don't care if it's a 10, you got a 5 and a 5 on the other two, coach, and that's a 20. They don't make it. So
well,
am I on to something
encourage
here?
People? Yeah, well, how do you encourage people to have desire? Where does this start? And I'm in agreement with you 100%. My whole problem in the political world is that people come to me with problems, and constantly you can find fault with everything. I say, come to me with the problem, but also come to me with the solution. Tell me what the solution is, and I'll go to war for you to try to make it work. But we sit here and talk about the fact that we don't have the talent. We don't have the desire. What is it it's going to take for us to turn this country around to where we are hungry again? We want to be the very best that we can possibly be. How is it that you're like your DNA? What is it about you that makes you who you are and what you are? And the ones that frustrate you, what's their DNA, and what can we do to change that to where they'll be like you are, hungry, aggressive, want to be the best that they can be, et cetera, et cetera? What is it we need to be doing?
I think that's our answer. But, you know, I've always said that the only thing worse than a spoiled rich kid is a spoiled poor kid. And I want you to think about that statement. You know, the spoiled rich kids sort of get by because they got enough opportunities with dad or mom's money, or they got to go to an academy there all their lives or something, and they're spoiled and they sort of get by. And it used to be that the poor kids were so hungry that they could climb out of an element. But now if you got a spoiled poor kid, if you got somebody that doesn't have the desire and they don't have the opportunities, wow, we have bad problem then. That's what I'm saying. We need hunger out there. So now how do we get that hunger? That's the formula. Let's narrow in on that one. So to answer your question, as a coach, if a kid's not hungry, it's real simple. You take away opportunities. That, as a coach, that's what you do. Now, I think we're to a place in our society where if you take away opportunities from people that are not hungry right now, people are scared to death. It's like what was going to happen if your number one player's lazy and you take away all his privileges and he quits? Well, you got to do that. We know as coaches. But look at the situation with some of those athletes out there right now, the spoiled rich athletes that throw their fortunes away. You know, so it's a big one, Carter. I mean, we could solve a lot of problems right here today.
We wouldn't be sitting here talking on our phone. We'd be riding around in Rolls Royces if we could solve this baby.
Would we get hungry? Would we get lazy if we were riding around in Rolls Royces?
You're right. No, you're right. Your complacency is not healthy. But I do know that from the voice of experience of the tennis camps that you and I have had an opportunity to run over the past 20 to 25 years, most kids are, in my opinion, they don't have a lot of confidence in themselves. They want to be told what to do. And if you set a goal early on, tell them what you expect out of them, and give them the opportunity to meet those expectations, most of them are so insecure that they'll do it. They want to be, you know, successful. A lot of it has to do, Chuck, with mentoring. If you take youngsters and you put them into the right environment, even though their family environment may not be the right environment, and you mentor these youngsters and give them goals, objectives, and set it high, You'd be shocked at what they can do. They can do it. You just got to put them in the right environment, give them the opportunity, plant the seed, and nurture them and give them the opportunity. I have confidence in kids. I have confidence that we're going to solve the problem. I try to be – most people that I hang around are see the glass half empty. I'm not like that. I don't think everything's bad. Everybody says, well, you're too nice a guy. You believe in everybody. You love everybody. Well, why not? Why not be, you know, positive? When I go to bed at night, I'm happy who I am and what I've done. I've tried to do the very best that I can possibly do. I haven't tried to do anything to protect or better myself. I've tried to help, try to make this a little bit better place. I'll tell you how this happened. It's interesting. My youngest granddaughter was christened. They had a minister at the Methodist Church here in Baton Rouge that I love. I'm a Presbyterian, and I was looking forward to going to hear his sermon. And when they christened my granddaughter, he got up on the pulpit and said, today we have a guest minister, and my heart sank. I said, I came here to hear Chris. I can't believe it. So this older gentleman got up, and he said, I'm going to preach today on integrity. If you know who you are, you'll know what to do. And that's always stuck with me. If you have a base, you have a foundation, and you try to do the right things, it makes it easy to make decisions. Some of the decisions I have to make where it may be a union situation or maybe tenure for teachers or a lot of the things, I in my heart of hearts think what I'm trying to do is the best thing, and every decision I make is in the best interest of the kids of our state and hopefully the kids of America, because we've done a lot of reform stuff in this state. And so I just think that we beat up everything so bad. I want to be optimistic and positive and try to find the solution, the answer, and I'll go to war for it. That's just my philosophy.
Steve, those are great words. I'm making notes. I got notes all over my notepad here. If you know who you are, you'll know what to do. And that's the, most of us don't know who we are as we fluctuate a lot. And mentoring, I want to hit back on the mentoring program. One of the places I just worked, I used to work at College Park, Maryland, and the thing that they did fantastic, there was a great leader there, Vesa Ponca, and then also Frank Salazar. And but they, in the tennis part, they have a mentoring program, Steve, where we have coaches mentor coaches. We have coach-player mentoring, then player-player mentoring. But let me tell you very quickly about the player-player mentoring. It's a three-tier program. Two-tier mentoring programs do not work because it grinds down the person who's giving all the time, and the person who's only receiving becomes like a pigeon being fed. So what we had the kids do was a three-tier. Everybody has someone above them, everyone has someone below them, and then everybody has their own support team that are their equals that are given permission to hold them accountable. So everybody learns quickly from a mentor, but you must pass on that learning to someone below you that is your student. But the most critical one is the peer group that is at your same level, because, and then you must give that peer group permission to discipline you, chastise you, or encourage you based on what they see. And it is a fantastic thing. Steve, I got that from Promise Keepers many years ago. Everybody has a Paul, everybody has a Barnabas, everybody has a Timothy in their lives, and it is the fastest way for kids to grow. So mentoring is a big solution that you brought up. And the other solutions, again, you lean towards opportunities. I lean towards trying to get the desire out of the kids. My claim is that desire and opportunity work against each other in the natural world. You must discipline one of them. You must, if a kid has a lot of opportunities, you must discipline his desire. If a kid has a lot of desire, you get him the opportunities. And then the stable, the one that is always the constant is the ability there. Talk about, here's what I think people would love to hear, though, real quick. Bureaucracies. I once heard, we had on, Steve Bellamy, who Steve Bellamy originated the Tennis Channel, and he has, the guy is one of the best entrepreneurs in the history of tennis. So Steve Bellamy was on there one time, and he said, a bureaucracy is like a beautiful house you make in the 50s or 60s, and then you start adding rooms on, and another room and another room and another room. Pretty soon, you got to go find a screwdriver. You can't find your way to the garage. You got to walk to 13 bathrooms, 4 bedrooms, 5 hallways, and pretty soon you forget what you're looking for. Do you think he's accurate with that? Talk about your bureaucracies. That, I mean, what you're saying would be so simple if we just put Steve Carter in charge, but can you talk about how these bureaucracies break down and things?
Well, in the position that I'm in right now, which I'm very fortunate, I love what I do because I have an opportunity to make a difference. We went in 2008 with 61 new members in the House of Representatives out of 105. Because of term limits, 61 new members. I'll never forget this day, Chuck. We went into an orientation and had 61 of us in that room, and the walls were bursting at the seams with optimism. Every one of them was going to make this the greatest state in the union. We were going to do whatever was necessary to make change and do things that would improve the quality of life of the citizens of our state. 7 years later, if I put those people in a room, you know how many people would be in that room? Maybe 7. Now, let me tell you what happens. The bureaucracy and all of the way that government is run beats you down. It will wear on you. I'm going to go back again to my statement. If you know who you are, you'll know what to do. And as you said before, many people don't have a base, don't have a foundation. They don't know who they are. Well, you take a lot of the situations in education, it has a lot of it has to do with unions, school board associations, teacher unions, teacher associations, et cetera, et cetera. All those people have a mission. Not that they're wrong. I just philosophically differ in the way they want to try to get things done, because what they want, in my opinion, is you give me more time and more money, we'll solve the problem. I don't think that's necessarily the best way to solve the problem. So I butt heads with them. But in a political arena with bureaucracy, these people who are out there who have a different job and a different philosophy, they're constantly pounding on these people. And they're constantly telling them that if you don't do what we need to be done, if you don't come along with where we are and what we're doing, we're going to run somebody against you. It's going to cost you $100,000. So they pound on them. They play on them. Again, you've got to believe in who you think you are. And it's easy for me to say this, and it's very easy, because I'm 71 years old. I don't care whether I get reelected or not. I'm going to continue to try to do the right thing. A lot of these people enjoy the process and enjoy the fact that they are a state representative, an elected official, and they like the arena. They like doing what they're doing. So then they're put in a tough position. Do you vote your conscience? Do you vote and do what you think you need to do the right thing? Or do you sit back and say, well, this vote doesn't make that much difference. I need to throw a bone to some of the people who are sort of mad at me to ensure that I can get reelected and ensure I don't have any opposition. So it's a tough arena. So the bureaucracy portion of it wears on you. It will wear on you every day because they see the glass half empty. I see the glass half full. So that's where you run into problems within the political arena.
You know, so you're saying people become prostitutes.
Well, I don't want to use that word.
I'm saying
process.
People become prostitutes.
I'm not saying they're selling out. I'm telling you, you get pounded every day by someone who's saying, you need to do this because, and it'll wear on you. So I'm not saying they're prostitutes. I'm just saying everybody's different. Listen, I live in Baton Rouge. My passion is higher education as well as education. I have LSU in my backyard. I love LSU. You take another representative from, say, Dry Prong, Louisiana. They don't have any institutions in their backyard. They could care less about LSU. They just want to have their gravel road paved. That's their priority. So I've got to work with people like that. It's a give-and-take situation.
Yep.
So
the
system is a tough system, but you just have got to sit there. And every day I'm blessed, and every day I get up and I look forward to having the opportunity to make things better. And that's all I try to do.
There's a saying that there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. And it's exactly what we hope for, is that our leaders are people of integrity that know who they are. Now, here's I went to great coach Tom Higgins, years at Eastern Kentucky, is now the Sunday school at a church that I've been to quite often here in Charleston, South Carolina. And for his ladies in his parlor group, I guess you would say, he was talking about circle of influences in our communities. And he said, folks, when I was a kid or when you were kids, the circle of control around us, before we did something wrong, we had God, and then we had family, then we had our neighborhood, then we had our community and our schools, and then it might get to the police or something. Here's what he said. God has been taken out of the schools. Worst mistake in history. Worst mistake in history. We all know that, because our moral people don't grow up in the moral compass. Families have broke down. So you don't have God, you don't have family. Our neighborhoods have been destroyed. Neighborhoods don't look out after each other. Families don't look out after kids from other families. School systems have broken down to where they're not looking after. Really, they don't want you to dabble with values at all. They just want generic core curriculums or generic No Child Left Behind or generic this or generic that. Everybody, one size fits all, where then the only, here's what he said, it was beautiful. He says, kids grow up, their first circle of influence becomes the police or the law sometimes. I thought that was very profound that he said that, Coach Carter.
Yep. You know, the problem, as I see it, is that we don't fear God anymore, and that's sad. To me, is very, very sad.
We absolutely have to speak about God. People, look, every one of you out there, you know, I don't care what your belief is. You believe or you don't believe. You believe in God, Jesus, or, but here as I give my talk, Carter, I always say, I keep remembering the scripture, if you are ashamed of me in this life, my Father is going to be ashamed of you in the next. That is so extremely powerful. That, folks, next time you figure, oh, it might not be politically correct to talk about God, you better remember that one, that it is shameful. And you know what? I'd say what I want to pretty much on this radio show, Coach, because it's the same thing with me. If they don't want to bring me back and do it, they don't need to bring me back and do it.
There we go.
It's a good place to be in life.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a good place to be. So, Coach, we only got about a minute here. I just wanted to, you know, thank you very, very much for being on. And anything out there, just how can people find out more about you? Do you have a website to go to? Or how can people learn more about what Steve Carter's doing in Louisiana Congress?
Well, I do have a website that is website with the state. I'll be more than happy to give it to you. It's CarterS@legis.state.la.us. I know that's lengthy, but that's the one that they have assigned to us. So it's CarterS@legis.state.la.us. There should be some information on that particular website about who I am and what I do and where I'm elected and the district that I represent, et cetera, et cetera. But again, Chuck, one of the great things, I'm going to say this, and you may not like to hear this, but one of the best things that ever happened to me was you entered my life. When you and I were sitting on that fence, you and I have philosophized, we've talked, we've worked. Your work ethic is second to none. As I said before, your development of talent is second to none. And I'm very proud of you. I'm very proud for you to consider me as a friend, and I really thank you very much for allowing me to be on this program.
Well, thank you for that friendship. You're very kind, but in the end, we're just trying to do the work. If you don't do the work you've been called to do, it may never get done. Folks, Coach Steve Carter, you always be coach. You always be a teacher. Thanks for being on today, Coach Carter.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Chuck Creasy. reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'd like to thank Representative Coach Steve Carter, and one of the finest men that I've met. I've been just so honored to have this friendship for a long, long time. But folks, it is your duty to stand up and to speak out and to stand for those things that are honorable and help other people and stay close to God. God bless each and every one of you. We'll see you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.